This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
You're listening to In Depth, exploring issues that affect you with newsmakers from around British Columbia. Here's your host, Province veteran news reporter, Ian Austin.
Ian Austin is on vacation. I'm your host, Darm Makwana. Before we begin this week's podcast, I want to say thank you for downloading In Depth with Ian Austin. We're coming up to the one-year anniversary of In Depth, and we wouldn't have made it without the support of our dedicated listeners. For those new to this podcast, be sure to subscribe to In Depth in iTunes, add In Depth to your Listen Later list on Stitcher, or find this and other Province podcasts on TuneIn.com. The Christie Clark government is going back to the drawing board to determine if it can afford to map out and manage groundwater reserves under provisions laid out in British Columbia's relatively new Water Sustainability Act. Earlier this week, Environment Minister Mary Pollock told reporters in Victoria that her staff will re-examine the fee structure used to pay for the management program, which is charged to industry for extracting groundwater from BC watersheds. That fee is $2.25 per 1 million liters of water. Let that soak in for a minute. Any private company has to pay the BC government $2.25 for every 1 million liters of water it uses for industrial purposes. In this week's episode of In Depth, we try to understand BC's plans for groundwater management. You will hear from Environment Minister Mary Pollock, Province reporter Dan Fumano, who was recognized with the prestigious Jack Webster Award for his coverage of this issue, activist Liz McDowell, and Nestle Waters Canada Director of Corporate Affairs, John Chaloner. Let's begin in Victoria in the halls of the BC Legislature with Minister Pollock.
I've asked my staff to take a look at the concerns that we've been hearing and see if there's any way that we can address that in the rate structure. Now, understanding that, even those who are in charge of the petition have said that the way they would set the rates would be to estimate what it is it would take to manage the resource appropriately, and that, of course, is the principle upon which we've based this to begin with. So we're going to be keeping that in mind, but taking a look at the rates to see if we can address some of the concerns that we've heard.
What is it, the concerns? Because you've been saying for a couple of weeks now the rate's fine. You've been arguing that it's okay, and now you're revisiting it. Why?
Well, in terms of someone like Ian Steffen, who's one of the folks behind the Nestle petition, one of the things that they pointed out is that they're not convinced that the amount that we're going to be collecting across the rates and fees and rentals is really going to be sufficient to manage what we're taking on in regulating groundwater. We want to ensure that that's the case and that we can actually show them that we are going to be managing that resource appropriately and collecting appropriate resources for that.
But does it open up the door for the sale of water? Is that a concern?
That's one of the reasons why we have continued to stay with the fees and rental structure that collects sufficient for administration. The rates, the dollar amounts, have changed with the Water Sustainability Act, but the structure for how we charge those fees and rentals is not new. It has been in place for generations in BC, and that's the reason why. We do not want to get entangled in things like free trade. We don't want to get entangled in things that would allow companies like Nestle or any others to actually own the water resource.
Did you catch what the minister said? The rates, the dollar amounts, have changed with the Water Sustainability Act, but the structure for how we change those fees and rentals is not new. Minister Pollock is right about the dollar amounts for fees changing. What she wasn't entirely forthcoming about is that the before provincial government charged $2.25 per 1 million liters of water extracted, it charged nothing. $0 for any and all groundwater taken from BC. It was reporter Dan Fumano who ignited public interest through a series of stories in the summer of 2013 about how groundwater was being managed by the province. He joined me in the province podcast studio to discuss the changes he's seen over the past 2 years. Dan, take me back to July 2013. What did the rules governing BC's groundwater look like?
There really wasn't much in terms of groundwater legislation in this province. At the time, as we reported 2 years ago back in July 2013, BC was the only province in Canada that wasn't regulating groundwater. Critics have been calling for an update to the water legislation in this province for a long time. The main piece of water legislation that governed our water use was more than 100 years old at that point. That's the Water Act. And so a lot of critics and activists have been really trying for a long time to get this piece of legislation updated and replaced.
What did you find when you started digging into Nestle's water extraction program in Hope?
Well, Nestle was really just one of many commercial groundwater users in the province. There are a lot of people using a lot of water, whether it's mining or industry or agriculture. Agriculture uses a lot of water. And then Nestle was one of the water bottling companies. They're the biggest out of the water bottling companies, but in terms of their overall water use, it's not as big as some of the other users. So we started looking at Nestle because they're the biggest of the water bottling users, and they're the biggest water bottling company in the world. And when we started talking to them and asking for their information, they were quite transparent with us, and they shared with us their annual reports, their hydrogeological reports, and let us know how much water they were extracting. They didn't have to tell us that. At the time, because of that lack of groundwater regulation, they didn't really have to tell anybody or even keep track themselves, really, of how much they were extracting. But they shared that information with us when we asked. Other water bottling companies that we went to didn't share that information with us. Because, again, they didn't need to. Some did, some didn't.
And then what was the total amount that you found? How much were they extracting?
I don't have it right in front of me, but I think it was somewhere in the neighborhood of 265 million liters a year that they were taking.
Now, when you saw that number, did you have trouble trying to understand what it meant? Is that an easy number to understand, 265 million liters?
No, I mean, it sounds like a lot of water, but it's pretty difficult to put into context.
Now, when you looked at Nestle's water extraction, I guess, program, and you know they're pretty transparent in terms of their statistics, their files, generally probably more forthcoming than one might expect. Did you find that other companies were as transparent?
No, some of the smaller water bottling companies we approached just looking for information about their programs, they didn't share that information with us because, again, they didn't need to. We asked and they simply said no.
At that point, the story, it caused a very visceral reaction, much how can BC give this water away for free? And I guess in the aftermath of that, several petitions started to come out. The BC New Democrats, their environment critic came forward and sort of said, well, this is wrong. What did you make of the petitions and the politics that came after you broke the story?
Yeah, it was interesting to see the reaction. I mean, when you write a story like that, and we did a couple of stories, but then I think it was the second or third one that really got a big reaction. Like you say, it didn't seem right to people. One of the things the environment critic said to me one of the first times I talked to him was, people assume that our government's taking care of these resources and doing what they're supposed to be doing. And then so when you hear that a resource as important as groundwater is just not being looked after, there's this sense of like, oh, who's minding the store? Like, who's looking after this? And so, you know, the provincial government, the Liberals who were in power at the time seemed to respond to that. And they had talked in the past about updating the Water Act.
And this update, the update seems to have been in the works for many, many, many years. It always seems to be somewhere on the agenda and then it falls off. Is that a fair description?
That's what we kept hearing from critics. So some of the people who had worked on this file for years, decades even, some of the people going back to the 90s that we talked to, people outside of government who had been calling for change, and they had sort of continually seen this issue get some traction and then fall off the agenda when something else came up. And they really hoped that this time would be different. And as it turned out, it was. You know, we did some stories there was a lot of public interest in the issue, and the provincial government responded. They said, we are committed to updating the Water Act. And that was kind of in the fall, I think, that the environment minister came out and said that. And then they eventually tabled that legislation. It passed, and now we've got this new Water Act that comes into effect next year.
So this Water Sustainability Act, what does it look like exactly? Or how? What are the key bullets, do you think?
I mean, I'm not sure about the details. I think it's a long, complicated piece of legislation. But a lot of what the government's saying is one of the key things is that it regulates groundwater for the first time. It brings groundwater under this regulatory regime, and that's kind of one of the key points. And so people will, groundwater users will need to start paying for their water extractions for most uses, and they'll have to monitor and report what they're using.
Now, in spring of this year, you had another story, and it was about opposition to water pricing levels. So maybe you can just help me understand how water pricing works and then what the government decided its rate would be.
Right. So the government passed the Water Sustainability Act last year, which, as we said, was updating and replacing this century-old Water Act. And at the time, they passed this act, and they said some of the details, including the really tricky issue of water pricing, those will be nailed down later on in regulations that will be attached to the act, which everybody said was a good idea because then it gives you more flexibility with these regulations, which could change over time. Then in spring of this year, they released the water pricing. And I remember it came out one afternoon, and we looked at the numbers, and the rates were lower than what some people had hoped for. Including, you know, we spoke with the environment critic, we spoke with some other independent experts and academics, and they said it wasn't so much about trying to profiteer or capitalize on this commodity or sell water as a resource, but just about making sure that the program raises enough money to properly protect and manage the resource. So when critics saw the rate of, you know, the highest industrial or commercial rate was going to be $2.25 per million liters, which is substantially lower than what some other provinces are charging. Again, it's more than groundwater users were previously paying, or even as of now, they're not paying anything.
Yeah, anything more than zero is an increase.
Yeah, but it was a smaller increase than I think some people were looking for. But again, I mean, these numbers are difficult to... I don't actually know how much it's going to cost to run the program for the next year. The government has said that based on their calculations, they believe these rates should adequately cover the funding they need to run this program successfully, to implement the Water Sustainability Act successfully.
Now, very quickly before we move on, in today's paper, you presented some information in terms of what other jurisdictions are charging. In Saskatchewan, it's $46.25 per million liters from many sources. In Quebec, $70 per million liters for purposes including water bottling and beer companies, and in Nova Scotia, $140 per million liters for some purposes. So when we look at comparing BC to these other provinces, it's safe to say we're on the lower end.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And maybe that's why we had the announcement in Victoria. Maybe it wasn't even an announcement, but just sort of words from the minister saying that pricing is going to be reevaluated. Is that right?
Yeah, yesterday at the legislature, in a scrum, both the premier said that she had sort of heard some of the public concern about this issue, and she had committed to reviewing these prices to see what could be done. And then the environment minister, Mary Polak, also said something to that effect, that she had actually asked her staff to take a look at it. So I don't know if there will be changes to the prices, but the Premier Christian Clark and Environment Minister Mary Polak both said that they wanted staff to review the numbers and make sure they're doing the right thing.
So what else is government saying?
Well, government's saying they're going to look at these numbers. They're going to review it. They're saying that they've heard the public's concern. To some people, that number just sounds strange. $2.25 for a million liters of water. But I mean, it's difficult for most people, if you're not a large-scale groundwater user, to imagine what a million liters of water is. But I guess it didn't sit right with some people, and it especially at this time of year. The petition got a huge second wind within the last week or two. You have to think that, you know, people are thinking about water and water use a little more seriously when we've got such hot, dry conditions. We've got drought-like conditions in several parts of the province.
Right.
And
you've been covering these drought-like conditions across BC in a few recent stories. What have you learned about what's going on across the province in terms of water consumption and water levels?
Well, like here in Metro Vancouver, we are using a lot of water lately because it's we have been using a lot of water so far this year because it's been really hot and dry, and also because we're coming off a very dry spring, very dry May, June, and a very low snowpack to start with. Our reservoirs aren't replenishing at the rates that they normally would. So the reservoirs are getting lower earlier in the season than is normal. And here in BC, we use a lot of water per person. I mean, Canada uses way more water per person than most other countries. And BC uses well ahead of the national average per person in terms of water.
Dan, thanks for coming in.
Hey, thanks for having me, Darm.
To understand the issue, Dan put me in touch with Liz McDowell.
Okay, Liz, can you give me like a little something?
Testing.
Liz is one of the organizers behind a petition that garnered more than 225,000 signatures asking government to review groundwater rates for commercial and industrial users. Her concern is that the provincial government isn't charging these users enough money to fund programs needed to map out and manage BC's groundwater. The numbers are again a little difficult to comprehend. Companies need only spend hundreds of dollars to extract hundreds of millions of liters of water. Liz makes it clear in our talk that the province needs to charge a responsible fee to fund management, but never sell water outright, which would turn the precious resource into a commodity that could be sold to the highest bidder. Here's our conversation.
We're recording on Tuesday. This podcast should be out on Thursday, and in between those 2 days is Wednesday. And Wednesday seems like it's going to be a very big day. Liz, what's happening on Wednesday?
Well, we're going to be delivering a petition to Environment Minister Mary Pollack, asking her to commit to reviewing BC's groundwater rates.
Okay, now she was in legislature on Monday, sort of alluding to some kind of review. What exactly are you hoping for in terms of results?
Well, first of all, we are really pleased to see the announcement from both the Environment Minister and from Premier Clark saying that they have listened to the concerns of over 200,000 Canadians and they are going to review our groundwater rates to see if they're high enough. And what we would like to see is we'd like to see much more robust rates that can cover the cost of a really strong water management system here in BC. So the Water Sustainability Act that's going to come into force January 1st has a lot of really great pieces to it. There's things that we really need to do to take care of our really precious water reserves. So things like mapping out all the aquifers in the province, things like that. And we're really concerned that the groundwater rates that have been set of just $2.25 per million liters are far too low to cover those costs.
So let's backtrack a little bit. When you started this petition, with zero signatures, what were you thinking in terms of the government's position on water management?
Well, we found it really scandalous that big industrial users like Nestle, like other bottling operations, also other industrial users, were able to take groundwater, unlimited amounts of groundwater, up to this point with no licenses whatsoever and with no fees whatsoever. And under the Water Sustainability Act, we were really surprised to see that they would still be able to take unlimited amounts of groundwater and pay really, really small fees. And we thought that was really scandalous.
I think one of the numbers that jumped out at me with this rate, this extraction rate, is $2.25 per million liters. And not to pick on Nestle in general, because they are very responsible in terms of their reporting. I don't know if you'd agree with that, but they're definitely more responsible than, let's say, other companies who haven't been reporting at all. They would pay $596.25 a year to extract 265 million liters of water. And I think Dan Fumano had that number as their extraction amount for the year 2013. That is Very difficult to comprehend, and I have a feeling that is why so many people started signing your petition. Do you think this is also has something to do with like a visceral reaction to how water is being managed?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, there's a very live conversation happening in the province and been happening for a while around how we should be managing our water resources. So first of all, I do want to say that charging a responsible fee for extracting water is not the same thing as selling our water. So I don't believe that our water should ever be for sale. I think our water is a public good and it should be managed in the public interest and it should absolutely not be sold to the highest bidder. However, I think that, you know, British Columbians look around and we see that, you know, our water is metered. We have to pay for its use. Municipalities pay when we look at surface water. And then particularly right now in the middle of a drought, you know, we're being asked to conserve our water use, to take shorter showers, not to water our lawns. And then we look and we see companies like Nestle and others taking huge amounts of water for pennies. And so I absolutely think there's a visceral reaction with that.
What do you make of the discrepancy? If I get, you know, caught watering my lawn, I'm paying $250 and that amounts to, what would it be, like $1 million? No, $100 million? I could take 100 million liters of BC groundwater, I think, if I do the math right.
Well, one of the, here's a piece of math that I found really interesting, is that industrial users can use the same amount of water that the average British Columbian would use over 9 years. So 9 years of water use for everything domestic, and the fee that they would pay for extracting that is less than a dollar. So I think absolutely what it points to is that our surface water has been metered for quite a while and has been monitored much more closely than our groundwater, and we're only starting to look at how best to conserve our groundwater.
Government is saying maybe we will. Mm-hmm. What are you hoping for? Like, do you want them to increase the rate? And if you do want them to increase the rate, what do you think a fair amount is?
Well, so I think there's two things that we want, actually. So one of them is what the specific petition was asking for, which is for them to review the rates and set something much higher. So in other parts of Canada, the water rates are much, much higher. So for example, in Quebec, it's $70 per million liters. In Nova Scotia, it's $140 per million liters. I mean, that's still not a huge charge to the end user, but what it does do is it gives the government enough resources to fund like a really robust stewardship of our water resources. So that's something we want to see. We want to see rates that accurately reflect the cost of really implementing all the great things that are in the Water Sustainability Act, because there are really great provisions in the Act, but if there isn't the funds in place to support them, then they're just not going to have any teeth. So that's the first thing that we'd really like to see. And then the second thing that we'd like to see actually goes above and beyond that, which is I personally think that the province should be having a conversation about whether we should be granting unlimited groundwater licenses at all. So how many companies should be able to take groundwater? Who should be able to take it? How much should they be able to take? And I actually think that conversation gets more and more relevant now when you think beyond bottling companies and you think about, for example, the LNG deal that was discussed yesterday with Petronas, because LNG production is going to be a huge water consumer. And so that's a really important piece of the puzzle to be thinking about, too.
Are you concerned the government is setting aside groundwater as a cost of doing business and creating economic activity in the province?
I really don't want to see that happening. And Premier Clark and Minister Pollack have both been very clear that they don't think water should be for sale. They don't think it should be a commodity. And I really applaud them for saying that. I really agree with them. It's different than the approach that they've taken to many of our other resources, like oil and gas, for example. But of course, right now what's happening, absolutely they're not selling it, but they are giving it away for free. And I think what we don't want to see is we don't want to see us end up in the same place as California is right now. So, you know, California's had four terrible drought years in a row. In the meantime, during drought, they've been using a lot of their groundwater reserves. And now NASA says that the whole state might actually run out of water within the year.
Do you think we could learn from California in some way? Do we need to see the extreme kind of drought and deficit they face for us to finally spur into action or make something happen?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it should be a real wake-up call for us. And, you know, absolutely our climate is different than them. But if you look at the drought that we're having right now, if you look at the forest fires that are raging across the province, it's not that difficult to imagine that if we don't learn our lesson, that we could end up in a similar place in 20 years, and we really don't want to. Like, this is a really good opportunity to actually look at this precious resource that we have significant amounts of and take really good care of it now.
Do you think that we're, as a Do you think that we're as a society kind of moving past that age of abundance, you know, where water is unlimited, you know, the air is always clean, you know, there's plenty of trees. Have we passed that point?
Oh, that's a big question.
That is a big question. I think that's what it comes down to a little bit too, right? Because if you're only going to charge $2.25 per million liters, or 100 million liters, per million liters, my mistake. Like, mm-hmm. if you're only going to charge basically pennies, mm-hmm. right, there's still this idea that there's so much of it.
Well, I think there's two separate things. So there's the fees that you charge to administer the groundwater licenses that can support the groundwater management, and those should absolutely be higher. But then there's the limits to licenses that you can set. So what the government can do is they have the power to regulate how many licenses they give out and how much water those companies can withdraw. So at the moment, companies like Nestle and other bottling companies and LNG and anything like that doesn't actually have to report the amount of water that they're taking. So Nestle does it voluntarily.
Sure.
Others don't, and they don't have to. So there are a lot of steps that we can take to protect that better. I do think that, you know, in BC, in Canada, but in BC in particular, we look around us and we see water everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so we're really used to it, and it can be difficult to imagine a future where we're in water scarcity. But if you look at the level of our reservoirs right now in the Lower Mainland and on the island, they're running really low. And so I think this is actually a really good wake-up call for us.
And that's probably what fueled the petition again in the summertime. I think it received another lift when people saw the forest fires, when people saw the drought conditions. Even though the connection between groundwater and forest fires is tenuous, how in your mind did the two connect?
Well, I think that the link between groundwater and forest fires is tenuous, except that it's connected both to drought. So the forest fires are worse because there's been a drought. The ground is dry. Everything's tinder dry. I mean, that's absolutely contributing to it. And the drought is also making people think about our water reserves. And surface water and groundwater is all part of the same system. And, you know, when we have a shortage of surface water, we're going to tend to use more groundwater. It's the same water table. It connects ultimately. But I do think there's a visceral thing where two weekends ago, when there were fires in Pemberton and Seashelt and on the island and inland and everywhere, and we had this, you know, terrible air quality in Metro Vancouver, we saw huge renewed interest in this petition, I think because people were saying, wait a second, you know, this is what's going on. And at the same time, big industrial users can take as much of our groundwater as they'd like to and pay basically nothing for the privilege.
Commercial and industrial users are the ones wearing the big red target on their backs. Environmentalists and activists can easily point their fingers, and government can too when the tide of public opinion turns against them. So I sought out a spokesman for Nestle and connected over the phone with John Chaloner.
John Chaloner.
He took the time to explain Nestle's operations in Hope, BC, the measures Nestle has taken to encourage water management, and his company's support for the Water Sustainability Act. John, can you describe your operation in Hope, BC?
Yeah, we're a bottled water manufacturer. We're based out of Hope, British Columbia. We've been in operation for about 15 years, and the Hope operation serves Western Canada. It's one of two production facilities we have in Canada. The other one is in Ontario and serves the rest of the country.
Okay, is this a big economic driver for Hope? Are a lot of jobs being created there?
It is. We're the largest employer in Hope and have been for many years. We employ about 75 people, and the payroll and benefits value is about $6 million annually. And we pay roughly $130,000 in municipal taxes and invest quite heavily across that part of the province.
Okay, another number that our listeners are probably curious about is the amount of water extracted. Now, I understand it's probably a bit of a trade secret.
No, it's out there. It's about 71 million gallons or 265 million liters, and it represents less than 1% of the available water in the Lake Kakawa sub-watershed where we draw water from. We're a relatively small user of water when you compare us to agriculture, which uses 70% of British Columbia's groundwater source. And the next group, I would say, is probably hydroelectric producers, and then forestry, mining, and oil and gas. The bottled water industry across Canada uses about 0.02% of Canada's fresh water, and it would be about the same in British Columbia. So the bottled water industry in BC is pretty small.
Okay. How do you manage to track extraction?
For the last 15 years, have been doing an annual monitoring report, which we file with the local municipality and the Ministry of Environment. And so we literally can tell you every hour of the day how much water we're drawing from the well, and how quickly it's returning to the water table, and if there are any impacts, you know, around us. And we file that it's called a hydrogeologic monitoring report, and we prepare it on an annual basis and file it.
To the best of your knowledge, do you know if any other bottling companies are preparing same reports and submitting them?
I would suggest that almost everybody else who draws groundwater commercially in BC is not filing a report today.
So why did Nestle choose this level of transparency in its bottling operation?
It's a policy that the company has had literally for generations. The company does this in every market around the world where it operates. You know, there's a number of reasons for it, but I mean, primarily, if you don't manage your water source for sustainability, you'll be out of business. And, you know, we're investing millions of dollars in that plant every year, and it would be foolhardy not to manage our water sustainably, because a sustainable water supply is a guaranteed water supply for your operations and allows you to continue to operate.
Now, have you had a chance to look over BC's Water Sustainability Act?
Yes. So we've been involved in this discussion with the BC government since 2009, since the white paper came out on the act. We have presented our views to the three environment ministers who've been in the role since the white paper came out. And we were always generally supportive of it. We only had one issue with the original white paper. And originally the government was proposing that regional municipalities have the responsibility for water management enforcement in their areas. And we felt that regional governments would be conflicted because they're also responsible for planning. And in our view, the Ministry of Environment should have the sole responsibility for the administration, enforcement, and management of groundwater in BC. And the government ultimately agreed with that position. And since day one, the government has indicated that there would be a price for groundwater use in BC, and we have always agreed with that. I mean, our position was that as long as everybody is paying their fair share, then we'll pay our fair share. And our belief is that when you compare BC's act against every other similar water legislation in Canada, it is the most progressive legislation anywhere in the country, and almost everybody in BC who draws groundwater will be paying for that water use come January 2016.
Can you help me understand how well British Columbia in general is surveyed in terms of its groundwater? So what I'm trying to get at is, does anyone know how much groundwater we have?
Yeah, so you're talking about mapping.
Right.
And there are areas of the province that have been mapped, but there are many areas that have not. And as you know, there are 9 major watersheds that make up the province's groundwater source system. And, you know, good chunks of them have not been mapped. And one of our principles was going in our discussions back in 2009 with the government, was that whatever fee was settled on had to accommodate mapping of the watersheds, because it's, you know, you really can't know what you've got available until you do that mapping. And the other side of that equation is you really can't know what you've got until everybody who is drawing groundwater files an annual report to tell you how much they're using. And then it becomes a math equation. And you know what remains as available. And in some cases, you may also learn that you're stressed. Now, I don't know if there are any areas in the province today that are water stressed. I simply don't know. But I think that we're going to know a lot more a year from now. Once the program is in full operation, people are, you know, they've got their permits, they're submitting their annual reports, the province is doing the mapping, and then the math exercise can begin and we can start to really manage the system well.
One of the ideas that's been tossed around is placing a hard cap on water extraction. So as an example, or a very lay example, someone could apply for a permit to extract, let's say, 100 million liters of water, and then that would be all they could extract. Is that something that Nestle would consider in terms of its operations in BC, or is that bad for business?
I don't know that it's really a relevant number. You know, let's sort of set aside the business aspect of it and sort of, it's an arbitrary number.
Absolutely.
I mean, until we know what we have to work with, until we've mapped, until we've got the intelligence that the 20,000 permit holders will provide us in terms of what they're using, I think it's kind of premature to sort of think about hard caps. And an arbitrary number, you know, it could be bad for business, it could be bad for the government, it could be bad for the economy, because, you know, quite frankly, and we're not one of the large users, there are some significant users in the province who are using far more than that, whether it's agriculture or hydroelectric producers, the oil and gas industry. I think you sort of have to really go through the intellectual exercise of understanding what you've got, what resource you've got to work with, what is being used, and then work on that basis. And I think, you know, as well as the mapping, and this gets forgotten all too often, is you know, a four-season biological assessment of what is going on in that watershed, and you know, what are the low points and the high points during the seasons, and what are some other impacts that you have to sort of take into consideration when you've got a permit holder in place, and how should they conduct their water drawing such that they don't have an impact on the biology at certain points of the year. And obviously we're in one of those points of the year. And so, you know, are there things that we should be contemplating in the future that help to sustain water during low periods of the year?
Okay, another question for you. And again, it kind of touches on the business side a little bit, but it also helps out in terms of assessing how much groundwater we have in the province. Is that the fee that's being charged per million liters of water to sort of support an assessment program, a robust regulatory body that can do this all-season approach. If the province were to come back with a higher number than $2.65, is that something that your company would be open to?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we said when the minister made the announcement yesterday that, you know, we welcome her review of the current fee schedule. I think it's always wise for a government to sort of take one last look before they implement the program to make sure that the fee schedule supports what the Act requires the program to do, but also check the program to make sure that it's doing what the Act requires in law. So, yes, to that answer. Now, let me go one step further. I think that it would be better if the province undertook its review 12 to 18 months from now, when we've had a year to operate the program and understand where we are in terms of both financial and ecological sustainability. So financially, is it self-funding, as it should be? Our view is that BC taxpayers who don't draw groundwater should not be subsidizing those who do. The second point is that the Act has certain requirements for programs that are going to be implemented that are funded by that fee. So, for example, there's the licensing aspect. You've got 20,000 permits to bring online. You've got general administration, general management. You've got enforcement. And enforcement is key. And I think that when you look at where some programs have failed elsewhere across Canada, it's enforcement where they've failed. BC also wants to set aside with these funds a capital reserve to build common water infrastructure, distribution infrastructure. So, you know, where will we be a year to 18 months out on that? And then what you and I talked about at the outset, the most important thing is the mapping of the watersheds and where are we going to be, you know, on that road. And so I think that it would be wise for this government to conduct a series of annual reviews on this program in the years to come that ensure that they're achieving what they said they would through the Act and that it's properly funded and we've got a system that is sustainable both financially and ecologically.
Finally, it seems that Nestle, the brand, or Nestle the corporation, is always the name being attached to water extraction. When the minister was making some comments in the halls of the legislature, she continued to say Nestle and other bottling companies. Is there any concern that perhaps, despite being transparent and to a large degree very accountable, as best as I can tell, that the brand is still being damaged or that work isn't being acknowledged?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we're not happy about the fact that we've been singled out in the petition as a company that isn't paying for the water that we draw. And I think it's very clear that we would pay for the water that we draw if required. We pay for the water we draw in other provinces in Canada. So we have no objection to that. As well, I think, you know, when you sort of look at the big picture, so, you know, we're drawing a minute amount of water provincially. Agriculture is drawing 70% of the water across the province, and you know we've been carrying the water, we'll say, on this issue from a commercial standpoint. People are focused on us instead of the big users in the province. That's kind of concerning, but you know to give the minister and the premier a bit of relief here. You know, I don't know how the question was asked of them by reporters during the scrum. So the context might have been a reporter said Nestle, and so they responded Nestle. I also think that because of the profile that we've had with the issue, and largely because of the petition, that people know what the issue is when they hear our name and then they hear, you know, Water Modernization Act, because it's become they've connected the two together. But yes, I mean, when you look at how we operate relative to, you know, most other industry, not only in British Columbia but across the rest of the country, we are a leader and we're a recognized leader in terms of water management. We regularly host municipalities and provinces, you know, their public works and environment people in our plants to see how we operate efficiently and to see how we manage water from a quality and quantity standpoint. And we'll continue to do that. This is unfortunate. These things will pass. We're quite frankly very confident in this government in terms of its ability to implement an effective act. I sit on the board of directors of Encore Pacific, which manages the deposit return system in British Columbia. And I've sat on that board for 7 years and worked relatively closely with the Ministry of Environment. They're very competent. I have every confidence that they will competently, you know, implement this act. I would say the one thing that I'm most disappointed about is that, you know, British Columbians don't know how good this act is. And let me give you an example of how good this act is. So let's travel, you know, eastward to Ontario, where they also have a water management program in place that we participate in. We're paying $3.71 per million liters extracted. Today, there are 6,000 permit holders in Ontario, a province that has far more fresh water than BC does. And remembering, the BC plan is going to have 20,000 permit holders. In Ontario, 2% of the commercial entities who draw groundwater for their industry pay for the water they draw today. In British Columbia, in January, almost every commercial producer who draws groundwater will pay for that groundwater. The Ontario program is running a $6 million deficit today. The BC program is going to be, we hope, I mean, this is the plan, that the $11 million that the minister identified yesterday as the first year budget will be fully expended and no more. It won't be subsidized by taxpayers. It will be paid for by those of us who are in the program. That message has not got out. And you know, we're all poorer for it. You know, we are almost at a point, I fear, where we could be throwing out the baby with the bathwater. This is the most progressive piece of legislation in Canada. And if I did more research, I'm sure I could say it's probably the most progressive water management legislation in North America. But I can't say that because I haven't done that level of research. But I can tell you, in Canada, it's number one.
Thank you for listening to In Depth with Ian Austin. If you liked what you heard this week, please share this show on your social networks. And you can always email me with story ideas at dmakwana@theprovince.com.
You've been listening to In Depth with Province news reporter Ian Austin. Subscribe to this podcast using the links available on theprovincepodcasts.com or search for The Province In Depth in iTunes.